Moonfest Destiny, number 14. Moonfest Destiny is a novel subtitled The Rough and Ready Balloon Invasion of the Lunar Peninsula of Texas by me, Peter Gelman. Since this is a novel, I suggest you start with episode 1 if this is the first time you're listening. Here I will read chapter 13. Moonfest Destiny is available on Kindle for 99 cents. Chapter 13, Jealousy and Jiggerbugs. The 1st of May was a long, long day on account of those hammering, jammering bells across the cold sea. I stood sentinel a while on the sandy slope, and I took a good gander around this contested P of T, and for the first time, I found it kind of pretty, even worth the trouble of steaming all the way to the moon in a dirty steam balloon, just to take a good long look at her. The desert glowed pink around us, the river a black ribbon. The eastern contours of far-off craters and hills glowed deep red in the mists of Mare Imbrium, the sea of rains. It was called a sea on account of the dependable rain and mist every summer that flooded the plain for a month. But just now there was no sea, just a sea of sand. I could see the lunar Alps, east of Plato, the squareness of the Strait Range to the southwest, and just the jagged tip of Pico Mountain, named after the lunar governor of Venus, said to be almost 2 miles high. The mountain, I mean. The governor is considerably less tall. And I could see, through a low part of the rim of Plato's crater, the town that used the crater for its walls. Inside the dirty yellow town, I saw the long rows of white-cloaked monks, ceremoniously gathering around each of the cannons pointed at us. Their mean little muzzles lay flat on the low crater wall of Emperor Iturbide Avenue, previously occupied most pleasantly by lovely Lunaritas. This arrangement of cannon was called Fort Paredes, after the latest lunar general, who got himself called president by kicking out the previous general, Herrera, who called himself president. It really got my goat that Paredes had the gall to call himself president, which was like if Polk called himself one of the Pope's saints. Moreover, I didn't like the fact that this Paredes character used Herrera's peace negotiations with Polk, a real elected president, as justification to steal himself that democratic title and honor. I felt nice and neighborly about the moon in general, but I wouldn't think more than twice about volta-bolting a Mooner General with my electric bayonet, especially one who had the nerve to sanctify his greedy nabob horns, president. The monks blessed each cannon, one by one, their Catholic crockery swinging and smoking. Still those bells, bells, bells gonged and bonged their brazen song. "Them lunar guns don't look too friendly like, do they, Sarge?" I said to Rutherford Weygart, a prodigious gambler, a gunner from the electromagnetics of Platform 2, upon which he had climbed to better train his spyglass on Fort Paredes. "But I hear tell they're vintage 1814, can't throw but 9-pound shot. All the Pope's hocus-pocus won't change the fact that they lost Waterloo. I'd bet the devil, my head, that those pop guns couldn't hurt a fly." "Well, they should scare you, Borginus," he said. "Yeah," I scoffed. "You think all this Christian devotion will kind of make their shots, well, make them a little bit luckier? They ain't Christian exactly, you know. They're Catholic." Weygart put down the spyglass. "First of all, Catholics are Christians." "They are and they ain't," was my reply. That's what folks always said about the Pope and Catholics. Folks talked like they were a kind of heathen foreign kind of Christian pagan foolery. I recalled something Hernani Kläger had said about it. But then again, he was a Catholic, so whatever he had to say was partial and influenced. "Oh, they are," said Weygart. "It's just that Protestants are more Christian." "Oh, I get you," I said, relieved. Second, said the gunner, 9-pound shot will kill you just as fast as lightning can, according to Major Ringgold's chart. I figure they can just make it over the wall. I snatched his spyglass. Oh, bunk and balderdash, those 9-pounders could hardly make the distance from Fort Paredes to the shore. Rest easy, Sarge. I trained the glass on Plato's crater, looking for lunaritas, but all I saw were soldiers, monks, horses, wagons, and cannons. Weygart insisted. I figured it all out mathematical on one of Ringgard's charts, and those 9-pounders can make it over this wall. Impossible, I said. I wasn't so sure, but I was bored, so I thought I could stoke up the coals of his dander just to see some sparks of gall and gumption fly. Impossible? What about the wind? He asked me. Wind blows generally our way. Wind, I scoffed. What's wind going to do? Does the Pope control the wind, too? Lest them pesky lunars rig up their 9-pounders with foreign topsails, I added, pretending to be worried. I laughed a crazy laugh like a monkey. Forget it, those antiques can't kill a fly. If that fly be so fortunate to be inside this fort I helped to build. If they kill anyone, I hope they kill me first. Did you account for the rotation of the sphere? See, the shot goes up, up, way up high, and meanwhile, the moon moves under it. Rotation, I laughed. Yeah, and curvature. Curvature, I said, amazed. Look, Sarge, it seems to me you think those Catholic savages are more Christian than we. Don't hide behind Ringgold's charts and wing and curvature. Just say it plain out. Seems to me you're chicken. His face stiffened. I'm not afraid. I shrugged. I wasn't bored anymore. I'm not afraid, he said. Easy to talk. But really, I am not afraid. It's all right, Sarge, I believe you. Liar. Well then, I said, there it is. I bet you ain't brave enough to wear my bad luck charm. Bad luck charm? Yep. What bad luck charm? He frowned. It gives you bad luck? Why, Sarge, you are afraid again. No, I'm not. Did you say something? I'm not afraid, you idiot. It's all right, I believe you. I'm not afraid. I'm a good Christian. I mind the Bible, and I don't drink, and I don't take whores. I gave him a dirty look because he seemed to be implying that my Sarah was a whore. Of course, Sarah had said she didn't mind being called one. Weygart continued, and I trust Ringgold's charts. I fear God and mathematics, not your heathen bad luck charm. It's all right there, Sarge, just forget it. No, it's not all right, I tell you. I'll wear your infernal bad luck charm for a week. I bet you that I can. I bet you 50 in exchange for your 25. What 25? I never been paid in a dog's age. I got Louisiana V-spot, though. 5 gives me 10, lest you take regimental vouchers. Vouchers, my eye. Just because I wear cross cannons on my buttons doesn't mean you can fool with me, doughboy. Give me your 10. It's 10 on 10, then. 10 it is, I agreed, putting out my paw. We shook on it, and each gave our double V-spot to another gunner to hold. Turned out, he kept it forever. In a little while, Company G came along the wall, and Francis Patterson replaced me. So I left Francis scratching his head full of lice and went off to make my bad luck charm. What could I make that's really frightening, I wondered. My bad luck charm was all humbug, but humbug is as humbug does, and I figured I had a chance at winning the bet. I got an idea. I went down to the bomb-proof, and once my eyes adjusted to the darkness, I did not have too much trouble locating a small fragment of that fossil that the sappers had destroyed. It was a disc of spine, looked like, ugly brown and black. I looped a piece of string through it. Hello, bad luck charm, I said. The bells across the sea kept up their public nuisance. What an awful clatter! I went back up to gun platform 2. Sarge looked at me with a sort of superior air. It was a mask. He was curious. "You sure you want it?" I said quietly to taunt him. "Give it to me," he cried and snatched it out of my hand. He immediately stuffed it in his pocket. Seemed to me he was afraid to look at it. "Oh no," I said, "you've got to wear it around your neck." I wanted him to feel that worrying tug on his neck. Wear it so God and the devil can see it. He grinned and put it around his neck. He crossed his sunburnt arms. "This charm makes you a lightning rod of bad luck," I explained. He snickered. He wasn't afraid. I thought to worry him some. I remember that Weigart always took the front stool in Reverend McKnight's Bible studies. "You know, it's funny. I trust you are a good Christian, but I figure that according to what you said, those Catholic savages across yonder are good Christians, too." "Why not? But it's funny. Both of you can't be good. Here you good Christians are, all set to try to kill one another. Both of you can't be right. But I figure both of you can be wrong. That's how my bad luck charm can get into your bones and work on you, because you say you are a good Christian." "And you?" said Weigart, much annoyed. "What about you?" "Me? I'm a bad Christian, so I don't need a bad luck charm. I know I'm going to suffer," I said smugly, like a nabob. I figured it was time to take my leave before he got so annoyed as to quarrel. In the army, among us lower ranks, quarrels usually led to fisticuffs, only we called it duels on account of respect for Walter Scott. I plopped down in the yard, pooped. We all laughed at old Sock as he ran by, terrified of all the bells, like they were some kind of hoodoo omen. We called him an ignoramus and lots of worse things, because, as we all knew, them bells was just the lunar way of saying howdy-do. But then, as I got up to look for Sarah, I saw Captain Miles running after old Sock with one boot on, brandishing his soft whip, because the offense wasn't a serious one. It was only that his boots were not polished to his satisfaction. He wanted his boots as shiny as a junker's. Sarah was busy. She bore a water bucket in each hand. She tried to pass me with just a smile. "Darling pretty Sarah, how lonesome I am for you," I told her. She stopped. She wiped the sweat from her face. "War's mighty sore on kissing and hugging," she sighed, and splashed a little water on her face. She tried to look at her reflection, but the water was jiggling around too much. "And it's downright heck on a woman's complexion. Jack, sweetheart, I miss you too." Sometimes I curse myself, seeing as I ain't no soldier, born a woman. But still I feel a powerful love of duty that keeps you running around like a chicken with his head cut off. "I know. Why don't we meet sundown at the number 5 gun?" She winked. "I know Captain Sewell pretty well, and he'll let us smooch behind that 6-pounder there, seeing as he ain't got nothing to shoot at yet." At sundown, I was there. I even dunked my head in a bucket of river water, wrung my beard, and combed my hair with my fingers. It was a waste of water, but despite rough and ready, Perfect Bliss had set an alternative example more acceptable to the women folk. I was still ragged and dirty, however, from the neck down. Sarah, on the other hand, was somehow immaculately clean in her floral print dress. I bowed to her, and she curtsied back. It was most civilized and genteel. Captain Sewell returned my salute and called his men over to the far side of the 6-pounder. Sarah and I scooted down low in a little nook where the emplacement met the bastion wall. There we found a little privacy as complete as on the 5th floor of the United States Inn of Baltimore. "Oh, I do love kissing and hugging with you, Jack Borginis," Sarah whispered, tickling my earlobe. "Darling pretty Sarah, what blue eyes you got." "They're reflecting the blue of the gulf," she said, looking up, where the sky was a most strange and pure blue, blue with a silver and black behind it. Most of the time men tell me my eyes is gray, she said. Tell me, Sarah, are the men bothering you? You jealous? Her dreamy smile left her face. She scowled, scrutinizing me carefully as if for chickenpox. Heck no, I made myself laugh, taking her hand and squeezing it. Good, said Sarah, relaxing. She snuggled closer. Cause I hate a jealous husband worse than jiggerbugs in my hair. Trying to get rid of a case of jealousy is like dunking your head in turpentine, but it never gets rid of that jiggerbug. You gotta cut your hair off, all of it. Understand? I nodded. What I like about you, Jack, is that you're such a good-natured, solid boy who loves me straight up but loose-laced and don't fuss all over me. She squeezed my hand back. Now kiss me. Because I was kissing her, I was too busy to admit that I would have fussed over her if it wasn't for the army, which now separated the wives from us on account of the danger so close, and gave them their own private ladies' dugout, the cleanest underground section of bomb-proof in the history of human warfare. It even had a rug, lacquered table and chairs, and flower vases somehow. It had a big framed painting of some prince in a toga, courtesy of Mrs. Frederick. No wonder so many of the 7th mules died. I thought it was just the weight of the company water barrels, piles, galvanics, Captain Miles' silver platter and china plates, and Reverend McKnight's patented folding foot-pumped camp church organ that exhausted them. They certainly made us men feel like barnyard creatures. Our dugouts were already filthy, foul-smelling holes, and we hadn't moved in yet. First I kissed Sarah, then I hugged her. Then I felt so good it made me feel bad I stopped. I felt such a yen and yearning for plain and simple-hearted Adam and Eve association that I just cold-steamed myself with enough gumption pressure to untwist my tongue and spit out the awful truth. It was like black bile was filling me with shame and self-scornification. Hold on, Sarah, I want to talk to you. She put her nose in my ear. If we talk, Jack, we can't kiss. I got something that's irking and worrying me to death. It ain't that bad, Jack. If it is, then I don't want to hear it. I killed a man, I blurted. Why, Jack Borginis, ain't you a soldier? Hush now, I order you to kiss me. Hold still and listen. It was more or less an accident. Oh, it was an accident then. It rankled because I couldn't confess it. She wouldn't satisfy my need to tell it. But the scorn was in me like fever. But I'm beginning to have bad dreams. I ain't no angel meself, and this is no time and place to catalog our trespasses. She put her lips on mine, but I pushed her away. This made her mad, but I was already mad. You say you're worried, but you don't want my womanly comforts? Be quiet. You're not doing me any favors. I ain't doing you no favors. I'm doing what comes natural, she whispered in my ear. Somehow, almost perversely, because I knew it was like trying to ride a beast-hung, unbroke horse with no saddle, all these thoughts made me tell her, you're the only gal for me, Sarah, ever. She stopped hugging and pushed me away to look at me. Don't say that, Jack. You'll be sorry. It's a stupid thing to say to me. Just know how much I love you, so much I could scream right now. You know I'm not the stay-put kind. Even if we don't get skewered on General Lunarina's bayonets, sooner or later we gotta stop loving and start fussing. Sarah, you are souring me a bit on our camp marriage. Seems to me that you don't love me deep down and serious. You don't want to help me carry any sorrow. Why should I want to carry your sorrow? Jack, dear, ain't good enough that I want to give you just a little bit of happiness? Why, you got to load our love balloon down with that old sorrow ballast. I don't know. I got to think about it, Sarah, I said. And I looked at her, smiled a little, and I added, as a balloon sailor, I can tell you, balloons need a little bit of ballast. She crossed her arms. I think you was just yeller to love me. That pricked the balloon of my heart, and hot dander poured out. I ain't afraid of nothing. There's no call to be mean about it, you corncob witch, I said, and I walked away. Kelly was sitting on the bomb-proof roof, trying to read his Walter Scott by moonlight. I complained to him about Sarah, although I didn't mention the bit about the accidental murder, which he knew about already. It's strange, but no preacher could say she's innocent. She often seems that way to me, though, especially when she has her arms around me. Not innocent like dumb innocent, but innocent with her feelings. But she ain't no paper doll. Maybe she already has too much pain in her life. She can't bite the bullet anymore. How could a girl who knocked out a ranger with just one punch be so weak as to not bite no bullets? Kelly scoffed. No, I figure you're right, Kelly. She's just too wild. You know, she's got skin on her feet a half inch thick. Maybe she's got a tough hide covering her heart. Keeps her innocent inside. But none of Cupid's arrows can get their Apache barbs into her. Well, I guess I'm not like that. She pretty much owned up to the fact that our camp marriage isn't a keeper. So fair's fair. I knew what I was getting into. I'm not complaining. Even so, I got a little angry at her, Kelly, when she wouldn't listen to me when I wanted to talk. Strange as it may seem, it seemed to me like she's doing me wrong to keep me quiet by kissing me. Jack, said Kelly, rolling his eyes, just listen to yourself. That is the craziest fool thing I ever heard. Won't you let you talk? Doing you wrong by kissing you? Brother, you are saving your a whole lot of money. Kelly, you don't get it, do you? She's not my whore, she's my wife, more or less. I'm talking about things of a higher altitude. All right, Jack, if you say so. Seems kind of crooked and contradictory to me. But I don't see as you can do a thing about it. You know, dare give her what for, like her lord and master. She ain't exactly the kind of woman who complains that her husband don't love her because he never beats her, like Millie Jellison does about Horace. Sarah's an Amazon, and it'd take more than a labor of Hercules to tame her. I laughed at the idea of giving her a matrimonial drubbing. Asked Wallace Gordon about it. Anyhow, Sarah's 6'2" tall, 3 inches taller than me, with a longer pugilistic reach. And I dare say she's got more natural fight in her than me. What little fight I had in me once is just about all gone from joining the army. And I was more or less going to talk about Camp Greenhorn troubles, but Kelly already knew about it, so I figured when he didn't bring it up, he didn't care to comment about it. I walked around some more and found Six Fingers Bordet. Six Fingers, you know about women, having so many wives and being a Mormon and all. Yes, I have wives, but I don't have anything the likes of Sarah, he grinned. But I can't see how she could love me and not want to hear my troubles. Six Fingers nodded. Looks like to me that frontier life could sometimes be harder on more or less quiet fellow who sometimes read books than these half-wild camp women. Sarah already said she wasn't going to be my camp wife forever. Ooh, did she now? He said, perking up with interest that I understood. And every man in the 7th Infantry is in love with her. She is so winsome, cheerful, and strong, I said to myself, giving him a mean look and turning away. It made me feel sad. Bordet got up and tugged my shoulder. Hold on there, Jack. You don't got to be giving me ornery looks. 5 wives is plenty, believe me. Why do you think I joined the regular army and not the Mormon battalion? All right, I said. The bells of Plato's crater rang on and on, ominously. Kelly found me. Jack, Lieutenant Harris wants you. I found Lieutenant Harris beside the bombproof. There you are. Private, Captain Sewell wants to see you on the double. I hurried across the yard to gun platform 5. Captain Sewell was sitting on the barrel of the 6-pounder with Sarah beside him. Both hopped out as I climbed up the embankment. Captain Sewell looked me square in the eye. Private, he said, I order you with all the power invested in me by the President of the United States to make friends again with your wife. Yes, sir, I said, saluting. He nodded and walked to the other side. Sarah was looking at me with a shy smile. Ah, Sarah, said me, you make me feel so lonesome and blue. Why do you want to start fussing now? She took my hand and pulled me down. You're right, Jack. Just kiss me. Yes, and now kiss me again. Oh, that's better, ain't it? You're a right sensible fellow. Won't you kiss me again? And just listen to all them bells. I wonder if old Zack will come get us out of this fix tomorrow. Nah, he knows we got a dozen days' rations left. I didn't want General Taylor to come rescue us. I almost didn't. Because when he did, Sarah wouldn't be locked in a fort with me. She'd be free to go. Right now, I knew she'd stay with me. But because she made me feel so sad, she made me love the more. She made me love the more her see-no-evil blue eyes, her good-natured dreamy smile, and most of all, her sweet and symmetrical ways. After a good long time of sweet symmetrical fun, Captain Sewell coughed and we ignored him. Then he whistled and called, "Sarah!" He said Major Brown was coming around on his nightly inspection. Sarah and I didn't get much time to kiss and hug after that. We walked back under the whirligig heavens, drinking secretly from our last pint. We had no idea what was about to happen to us all. Thank you for listening. Again, Moonfest Destiny is available on Kindle for 99 cents with illustrations. So as you know, the fort has a bombproof in it, a dugout, a bomb shelter to protect from the explosive shells that will fall on the fort. And it reminds me of a story my cousin told me from the Gulf War. I missed the Gulf War because I was in Mexico during that time and there wasn't the internet yet. So I didn't really know what was going on. He was a Marine, serving as a Marine officer, running trucks in Kuwait. And there were concerns about Scud missiles, Saddam Hussein's Scud missiles carrying biological weapons. So he had his company build bomb shelters. And everyone laughed at him because they were far from the front line. And lo and behold, Scud missile came in. And everybody who laughed at him crowded in the bomb shelter and there was no room for him. I think he found that irritating. This chapter I just read spoke of the friction between Protestants and Catholics in the United States. It certainly was a much worse in that century, but right before I was born, with John F. Kennedy, a candidate for president, he was asked specific questions to allay fears that as a Catholic person, a Catholic president, he would not follow secret orders of the Pope. I'm not really clear on how Catholics and Protestants feel about each other right now. Okay, thank you for listening.